Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I've had one too many cigarettes burning up my lungs. Had to taste of one too many lips hanging off my tongue. Oh, oh, oh. Sunday morning getting high, drinking here alone. Thinking up a brand new alibi for not coming home. Oh, oh.
Allows us to explore our dark sides and find our way to the light. I celebrate people who, like the founder of the show, recognize if they are on a dangerous path and make the difficult adjustment to be an amazing person. Share the poems that reveal the duality of our vulnerability and strength. Capture the internal battle of the demon and angel on your shoulder. Deep poetry, thoughtful commentary, and fun chatter for sinners, saints, and everyone in between. This is Part Sinner, Part Saint on Late Night Poets After Midnight. We are a group of on allpoetry.com. You don't have to be in the group to participate, but it's more fun if you are, because you can talk to us in the chat and read the poems as we do. I'm Aphasiana, and with me tonight I have Pam, Ray, and Robbie. Hi, Pam.
Hey, Phasey. How's it going?
Well, you know, surviving. I managed to talk without coughing there, so that's a good progress.
That is good. Well, I guess after you sound better, but I know these things kind of tend to cling on for quite a while.
It lingers. Like yesterday at work, I had a story time for the preschool kids, which is about half an hour, and then I had a 10-minute break, and then I had a kindergarten presentation and then a grade one presentation, and man, by the end of it, I could barely breathe. I thought I was doing better, so I went to work, and I'm like, maybe I'm not quite there yet.
Oh, my gosh. Yep.
I did, but it probably was not my best reading.
Yeah.
Such is life. And if I'm yelling, I'm sorry, I have an ear infection, so I have a hard time hearing, and I don't hear myself.
Well, I definitely understand. I'm always having sinus and ear problems and, you know, find myself speaking louder than I actually should be. So I totally get that.
And Robbie, welcome. How are you doing tonight?
Well, good. I've been enjoying my new robot haiku book, a coffee shop gifted to me. It has some of the most hilarious, I'm hearing that echo now. Sonnets, or not sonnets, but little haikus and that. A lot of them are kind of a little risque, and a lot of them are just outright ridiculous and hilarious.
Oh, that sounds cool.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there is delays today for random people because I'm hearing myself in the background. Yeah, like if I wait for 2 seconds, I can hear myself.
You can have a conversation with yourself.
Yeah, well, that was just kind of surreal because I'm a twin, so I feel like someone could say, well, I'm having a conversation with my twin, but that's, no, it's myself. But I am my twin.
So
you don't
want to
go there. Your mind would explode.
Twin?
How's that?
Oh, are you an identical or a fraternal twin?
Identical.
Oh, cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, that was my day.
That sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm glad you're both here. We have some fun entries. And by fun, I mean, like, emotional, because, you know, with my prompts. also fun. But the prompt was, look closely at the present you are constructing. It should look like the future you are dreaming. So that's the quote by Alice Walker. And we have some very nice entries to that. So I'm going to start with one by Jenny the Deep. And this one is called Rebuilding Our Future. Futures falling apart, blinded by ignorance, fooled by corrupted blissfulness, refusing to learn our history's past makes the entire world fail fast. Frozen in silent fears kills all of our futures. Truth lies, pages of life turn into harsh chapters. Chaotic turbulence divides, shaking up innocent bystanders' lives. Once untied, orbiting whole, falling flat like new earth. Trust no one, for truth lies. Frozen, trapped in your fears, volatile words appear. Volition ceases to exist. Withered hearts, tattered minds unite no more. When we can learn to understand and let love take our hands, then hate can be frozen. End poem.
Did you want somebody to comment, Phoebe?
Yes, thank you. Sorry, I need to talk after I read. So, yes, Pam, please go for it.
Okay, all right. Well, I liked this one. I like the rectometer form that she wrote in and how it gives a nice shape to each stanza. I thought this was just a wonderful philosophical write, thoughtful, heartfelt lines on learning from our past, not only our individual past, but history of society as a whole, and understanding the importance of love, not only towards each other, but towards towards the earth itself. I did like the reference to falling flat, like new earth, the idea of the reference to the so-called flat earth society, and the twisting of truth and the lies that come out in that manipulation. So I did really particularly like that second stanza. And I like the phrase chaotic turbulence divides. Wonderful lines on how we oftentimes have trouble setting aside our differences because it's more important for us as a society to prove ourselves right in those small debates than work on the betterment for mankind. So excellent write and very well done.
I agree. And I really liked that part you pointed out, the falling flat, like I'm talking about the flat earther conspiracy theories there. To call it turbulence that is dividing people, I think is a really good word choice. So I have to agree with you, Pam. That second stanza stood out as the strongest one to me. In the first stanza, I liked fooled by corrupted blissfulness because it's, you know, there's that ignorance is bliss thing. And the problem is that sometimes the corrupt know that you want to be blissfully ignorant and they, you know, they push the things on you that make you not want to pay attention to the other stuff. And they play on the fact that people kind of are okay with being ignorant if it's more convenient sometimes, and that can be used by manipulative people. So I thought that was a really intelligent way of playing with this. Jenny put a lot of thought, and it works on a like distant level, on a bigger picture kind of level, which I think is different from her because usually she writes more personal. It's a different style from her, although she does keep her physical style, the rectameter form that she's been fond of, and she's very good at that. That I think it's rectameter. Yeah. And Robbie, what did you think?
Well, what really caught my attention in this one was the aspect of the word frozen, because lately I've been thinking about how, like with politics lately and the feeling of the world in general, but I guess especially the politics, it's like there's all this frozen, it's like there's all this hidden hatred and types of people that are just kind of laying there waiting, and it's like they get unfrozen when the right kind of rhetoric comes around, you know, and all of a sudden they come out of the woodwork and they say all the crazy things that they do, and they do all the crazy and horrible things that they do. And so it made me think of that, and that the once united orbiting whole falling flat like new quote unquote earth, that caught my attention as well. And I like, yeah, it says trust no one for truth lies. And I've been thinking to myself more and more lately too, how it really is hard to get to the truth because you think to yourself, okay, so is what I'm hearing a complete and absolute fabrication because someone does indeed have an agenda? Or is this a conspiracy theory that's being artificially woven to keep me distracted from other things that are going on? And that's the thing, is you don't want to buy into conspiracy theories all the time. But at the same time, you know, you don't want to, you don't want to buy into every fact and everything, but you know, you you do want to have a critical eye. And I think that in this world that we're living in now, having that balance of having a critical eye but not buying into things that are probably, you know, more than likely to be just, you know, generated conspiracies, it's getting to be an almost impossible task.
You have to have a critical eye on the critical eyes. That's the thing.
Yeah, and that, I hate it. I hate that. I'm glad you said it. It's like, it's exhausting. It's just this horrible Mobius strip that you get stuck on. It's like, oh, and you're like, oh my God, I don't want to have to do this. I have to figure out who to trust, and it's a necessary thing to have to do, but it can be a hateful process. It's just exhausting,
mm-hmm.
emotionally and mentally.
This is true. Sorry, I had to mute myself to cough for a second there. Okay. Our next poem is by Ianthia. And Robbie, would you read that one, please?
Okay, I just got to open a new tab here. Okay, so here we go with Today by Ianthia. That's a cool name. Today. Today I am deviating from the straight path, pursuing a purple sand dune mirage, unearthing fragile secrets that exist half buried in this mine cavern. I am stomping uncharted grounds, stoking unexpected stings and fires, led by a cluster of stars that conspire against half-desired destinations. I am humming old songs, half-remembered lyrics, whispering unheard of words, brand new phrases, remolding memories of those green days in my cloud-embossed ivory tower. I am splashing patchwork quilt-like colors on pristine white reglazed surfaces, recomposing haunting eyes and faces that are half lost in the forest of lores. I'm wandering in the black woods of Bohemia, Patagonian deserts and Australian ocean reefs, traversing underworlds and moonscapes that are half created by runaway fancies. Today I am burning bridges, tearing down walls, bonds and rituals that bleach my bones white, rediscovering half-discovered, half-hidden avenues that lead to me and the wild siren call that echoes to be, to be, to be. And that is Today by Ianthia, who I think has the coolest handle name on poetry.
That is awesome. Thank you. Great read. And I think I want to look up that name because I actually don't recognize Ianthia, but it does sound really cool. Does it have a meaning that I don't know, Robbie?
No, but it just has that it just has like that Greek, I was just looking it up and it says, the Greek name for baby girls derives from, okay, Ianthia meaning feet or violet. And right away, it just had a Greek sound to me. And it just had that, like, name of a, it had the sound of like a Greek god or goddess. And I just,
yeah.
I like when names have that Greek sort of sound to it. So.
Good eye. I also like that. I've been listening to this podcast that's called, Let's Talk Mythology, Baby, and it's just like some woman who's giving a recap of Greek myths, and then she usually has like this perspective of like, man, Zeus was an asshole, or like as she's reading it, she's like, you slut, and like, she's just like yelling at the characters. It's
you
pretty
have to
fun.
Tell me about this woman, because I've come to the same conclusion. I actually want if you could private message me that, because I've come to the same conclusion. It's like, damn, Zeus is just like, he's like the biggest douche ever. He's like the personification of douchebag frat boy to me.
Basically.
This is my tangent for the night.
I think you would really, really enjoy this podcast. I'm going to send it to you. So, back to Iamphia's poem. I really liked the phrasing of things. Led by a cluster of stars that conspire against half-desired destinations, like, for stars to conspire to kind of send you in the wrong direction, but not the wrong direction exactly, their half-desired destination. It's that place where you're like, maybe I would go there, and it's like, oh, yeah, now you're going there. That does have, like, a mythological feel, doesn't it? Again, the half-desire, this half-remembered, the unheard words, it's cloud-embossed ivory towers. There's this kind of, like, haziness of, like, you know, but you don't really know. I really enjoyed that sense of it. It has kind of an ethereal feel to it. I am burning bridges, tearing down walls, and the bonds and rituals that bleach my bones white. It's like you're trying to, like, clean yourself with these rituals, and you end up, like, kind of destroying yourself in the process, because bleach is quite harsh. You know, you try to get something clean with bleach, and you may have got rid of the colorful stain, but you have a new stain now. It's a just different kind of stain. So that makes me think that, like, sometimes when we try to clean something out of our lives, we go a little bit too far. But I don't know. Maybe I'm reading things into that aren't really there. Either way, I very much enjoyed the way this was worded, and I will be following Iamphia. Miss Pam, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I really enjoyed and appreciated this poem. Such wonderful imagery and a great take on the prompt. I really like pursuing a purple sand dune mirage, not only because that's lovely imagery, but because Alice Walker is the author of The Color Purple. So I thought I don't know if that was intentional, but if it was, it was really cool intentional or just a really cool accident. You know, thoughtful lines throughout, and I like how this speaks on the journey of life and moving forward and trying new things, and the idea that the new things we try, the adventures that we go on, the things we see and the people we meet are all part of what shapes us as a person. I really like the line also, I am wandering in the black woods of Bohemia, and then today I am burning bridges, tearing down walls, bonds and rituals that bleach my bone white, rediscovered half-hidden avenues that lead to me. Such wonderful lines on self-discovery and the idea that sometimes renewing can be a painful process. So, excellent write and very well done.
Excellent comment. Robbie, I know that you read it and that you appreciated the name, but what else did you appreciate about this poem?
What else do you for me, somehow, and I don't think this is what the poet intended, but the poem has a feeling to me of, like, revisiting the past, like revisiting the past in the terms or in the sense of the ideas that you had back then. Perhaps it's colored a little bit by the fact that I'm doing that with a lot of what I have, like, in my house, like all the things that I've gotten for myself in my house, and especially the instruments. But it's partly, I think, because, like, especially in the last stanza, it says, today I'm burning bridges. And, you know, when you're burning bridges, you tend to think that tends to be in reference to getting rid of past connections that aren't beneficial. And then that talks about the bonds and rituals that bleach my bones white. So it's kind of like a cleansing action. And so especially because of that last stanza, I get overall feeling that aside from being an adventure that perhaps going into the future, that like it's like they're revisiting the past, the past and all the ideas they had back then and saying, okay, what was it that worked for me? What was it that didn't? And how can I go forward after this reevaluation of my ideas? How can I go forward now? So I have a feeling that wasn't where the Aaron, don't make me laugh on the air. it just makes me think of that sort of general direction.
You guys in the wax tonight.
you have to look at the past to understand that reference.
It becomes a slippery slope.
Nice. Our next poem is by Captain B2, who is one of the Late Night Poets hosts. Pam, would you read the captain's poem, please?
Absolutely. I would be honored to. All right. Let me get over there. And this is Visualized by Captain B2. I stand and stare at what is now there. I look harder and see just how it could be. Right then I know how to make it so. The actions I take, all the difference will make. The possibility of accomplishment is mine when my persistence and determination combine. End poem.
Great read, Pam. The directness of this, you know, it's like knowing what's actually there and how it could be, and then having the, you know, knowing the things you have to accomplish to get there. I mean, that sounds very much like Bobby, the captain, because I can just see her, like, with her military mind going, well, these are the steps to get there. Like, just as a matter of fact, like, of course, that's what I'm going to do. She'd be focused on it and know what to do. And I think she has this very practical way of handling it. You know, you visualize it and you make it happen, but you're not just like expecting it to come to you because you think of it. Thinking of it makes you think of the steps, and that's how you get there. And I think that's her mentality that I see here. Robbie, what did you think?
This grabbed me right away because the art reminded me of a friend's artistic style. And her artistic style and this picture too, they really have a feeling of kind of abstract but very real at the same time, kind of like geometric but very solid. And the thing is that it matches the poem for me because it's like, well, at the bottom it says, contest brevity, motivation, less than 50 words. And then it has the word positron. And I was thinking of like kind of that quantum kind of effect or feel where, like, you know, where they talk about where you think about something and it comes into reality. And that's that's totally the thing I get when I see this picture. And with the way the poem is in structure, like you say, it's very direct. So it's like the whole idea of, okay, what do I want? How am I going to get it? How am I going to bring this result about? And that kind of, the last part of it, you know, how do I bring this result about? It kind of makes me think of the idea again, that I kind of see in the picture of you know, how do I visualize it so that I can bring it into being? So I thought that it was very interesting that way. And just the way the whole thing was visually set up to the font and the way it went with the picture, we were talking about the synesthesia before earlier today, and it has that kind of semi-synesthesic effect. I can literally feel this certain very distinct but kind of abstract feeling of what the poem's trying to impart. So I'm definitely going to have to visit this poem again later and drop off a more detailed comment in the comments below there.
Yeah, I'm sure she would appreciate. I had something that I was going to say in response to your comment, and now I already forget it. So we'll go to Pam.
All right. Well, yeah, that happens to me too. When I have a co-host, I'll try to bookmark in my mind, and then I'll completely blank out. But, yeah, this is a wonderful brevity, great rhyming couplets. You know, it's always great to see a write by Bobby. I really like how she thinks, or she writes about the power of positive thinking and one envisions their potential, but also the importance of taking action. It's almost as if visualization is the first step and taking action is the second step. This is definitely, there's some lines in here that I could see being on a poster, for motivation, one of those motivational posters, especially the actions I take, all the difference will make. And that is so true because, you know, you can imagine, you know, you can visualize, and that's important, but if you can't move forward with action, you're not going to accomplish moving towards your goal. So excellent write and very well done.
Great. So now we have one by T. Writes, and that one is called Live Today for Tomorrow by T. Writes. The church bell rings away, telling us about each passing hour. The sun rises, descends, and the moon comes up. As I confine myself within the wooden walls to write my future, study is my scroll of paper. Dedication, perseverance, and willpower are the different colored inks. People say I am leading a bland life. Little do they know, I am assembling the spices for the mega cuisine of tomorrow. Teenagers of my age play with friends, go on vacation, eat at fancy restaurants, while I play with numbers, travel through history books, and dine on pages of knowledge. I dream high, higher than the blanket of clouds above. Therefore, I use my present to build my stairs with small bricks of success towards invisible height. And my lips curl upwards when I see my construction shaping in form of the future I am dreaming. End poem. And Pam, would you start the comments, please?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, that's a new name to me, and I really like that name, T. Wright. Very cool. And I hope to be reading more of their poetry, and I hope they're inspired for more of our shows. You know, it's so great to see a write done by a young person. You know, at least I'm guessing a younger person, since it seems as if this is a personal write, and they say teenagers of my age play with friends, go on vacations, eat at fancy restaurants, while I play with numbers, travel through history books, and dine on pages of knowledge. Yeah, I like those lines, and I like the first-person narrative. speaking on somebody who knows what it takes to reach their goals, that knows, and obviously there's nothing wrong with taking time to have fun, and I do hope they have some fun in their life, but I like to see the idea of a young person who is focused on their future and knows that in order to succeed, they have to lay the foundation through the studying they do and the things they learn. I really like where she uses the word dedication and perseverance and willpower, the different colored links. And then near the end where she says, I dream high, higher than the blanket of clouds above. Therefore, I use my present to build my stairs with small bricks of success. And I think I really like the small bricks because that makes me think of small steps, how the idea of reaching a big goal, it can trip you up if you try to take those bigger steps. But if you build the smaller steps, the smaller bricks, you're going to, I think, more, I don't know, easily reach that goal. But I think you're definitely going to find yourself having a smoother path. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Yeah, I like your comments. I think my favorite line was the assembling the spices for the mega cuisine of tomorrow. I like that idea of it being this recipe and, you know, may not be making it just yet, but getting all those ingredients ready for it. It's such a great metaphor. And it's not just cuisine of tomorrow. It's the mega cuisine of tomorrow. There's going to be big things in their future. The dine on pages of knowledge. I like that. I think this is really great. I mean, I have to say, I resent my younger self for being a little bit too much like this, where, I didn't let myself have enough fun. I look back now and I'm like, I don't know. I regret not having a little bit more of a free spirit when I had the physical capability of doing so. So I think it's a balance. But I really admire the dedication that this person has to prepare for their future. And the metaphors they use in this are fantastic. I almost called you Dan. Robbie, what do you think?
It's a night of names today, isn't it? this poem had a tone of, and I think this is going to happen tonight, like, because we're talking about building the future and how to look at the future and just how to do all these things. And I think that there's going to be a lot of poems that have a distinct tact on that or a feel. And with this, I definitely get the feeling of building. It starts with a building. It starts with a church bell that rings away. And overall, the imagery in this has a feeling of, it's not building buildings, putting things together. It says assembling the spices for the mega cuisine of tomorrow. So it's like putting something together into a creation. And I thought it was kind of funny and neat that Aaron Panther had said in the chat, set your goals one Lego brick at a time, because for some odd reason, this poem abstractly made me think a little bit of Lego bricks. And I think just because this poem is kind of got a feeling of, one day at a time, one piece at a time, and when I got that feeling, I thought of Legos, because Legos is very, very methodical, unless you're 2 years old and you just throw them against the wall, But yeah, so it made me think of that.
I like that. Lego comes in so many cool ways now. Like, you can get Lego with writing on the side. You can get Braille Lego where the little bumps actually say things. And you can teach Braille using the blocks where you build the sentences. So that's not where you were going with it, but it just my mind went there because I'm like, poetry with Lego, we can do this. We actually have that at the library. We have the Braille one.
At work, they have Orchid Lego, and it just looks like the most amazing thing. And Lego is not just for kids anymore. They have, like, they have that, and they have, like, the Technics Lego that, like, you could be an adult, and you'd be, like, having a challenging time with putting together these, like, Technics Legos that are built into cars.
Yeah. Oh, it's intense. I have the flower ones. Yeah, my husband got them for me for, I think it was Valentine's Day last year, not this year. So I have a bunch of the, looks like I have vases of flowers, but if you go close, they're Lego. did everyone get to comment on that one? I think so.
Yes.
Okay, good. I didn't want to miss anybody. This next one is Marry That Girl. And, Robbie, I think it's your turn to read.
Okie dokie. This is Marry That Girl by Lambs. It was a rainy night like tonight. I ran away from my college block, trying to find my way home so I can catch some sleep. Little did I know that you were in front of me. You turned looking all drenched. Your little black dress clung to your skin as the icy cold, fast rain fell, reacting to your skin to make you shiver. I gave you an umbrella. You looked in my eyes, and I took whole delight in you, and my heart began to sing. We dated, sheer bliss. We loved till love could no more. Our love filled the room we needed. Seeing you was a dream come true. It was the best thing that ever happened. Now I'm sitting in a fancy ball thinking about the things I said when you asked me. Will you marry me like this? I'll marry you anyways. Marry me gross? You've not seen worse. Marry me broke? I'll become Elon Musk for you. Will you marry me in the sun? I'll throw the wedding in the worst blizzard. Marry me now, I'll marry you anyways. Marry you anyways. But things didn't go as planned. Life happened with a bang, crashing all our plans and causing a rift. You argued about my faults. I complained of your tiresome behavior. We didn't see any colors. It had all faded to black and white. As you left me, I began to race and feel the walls, the glasses of everything you touched, every little remnant of you. For the blackest war-filled nights with no stars to navigate my trouble, I'll be up, waiting for a voice to call, but to no avail. For my soul would torment me, and my mind will play everything. Of all the promises we made, I could still hear faint voices inquiring softly, will you marry me like this? I'll marry you anyway. Marry me gross? You've not seen worse. Marry me broke? I'll become Elon Musk for you. Will you marry me in the sun? I'll throw the wedding in the worst blizzard. Marry me now? I'll marry you anyways. Marry you anyways. There's a Hossa saying that you never marry your first love until your later years, where you reconcile and come together. I never knew I could feel so distressed. It was like a black plague that fed on me physically and mentally. So this is the love that everyone is not so lucky to have? How could I have been so stupid? Now to the ball I'm in, there you are, shining with luminous light. Your 50th birthday, as grand as we wished. My unstoppable tears broke free like a dam with a leak. I rose to go. I couldn't bear this cup of pains anymore.
but your frail old hand held mine. "Stay," he said, beckoning me outside. We laughed and caught up an old time where we were young to do anything. It was there that your lovely brown eyes looked at mine with tears at the brim, tears of joy and sadness mixing to create a bittersweet concoction. Your mouth opened slowly, and you asked me the question of 30 years ago that laid my whole soul unrest, that shattered me. That question was like wine, and like wine I must drink. You took my hand and asked again, "Will you marry me like this? I'll marry you anyway. Marry me gross? You've not seen worse. Marry me broke? I'll become Elon Musk for you. Will you marry me in the sun? I'll throw the wedding in the worst blizzard. Marry me now? I'll marry you anyways. Will you marry me in this world? Baby, there's always Neptune. Will you marry me helpless? You can always lean for me. Will you marry me with your heart? My tattered soul and meager flesh will join in. Marry me like love, as long as salt remains in the seas and oceans. Marry me old. I'll marry you anyways. There's no better way." And as you kissed me on that silver moonlight reflecting in the water, my head was singing, "Marry you anyways." As I held your hand and kissed you in the altar, as we strode, I heard the bells chanting, "Marry you anyways." As I lived with you in old age, in distilled harmony, the wind was whispering, "Marry you anyways." As you left this world to another one, I cried, but took joy that I'll find you in that minotaur labyrinth, because I'll marry you anyways. As I felt my last breath slip away, I cried silently, saying it was too long, but I'll find you, and I'll marry you anyways. End poem. I should have said end poem after I, that was a long one. I didn't want to not say end poem, and everybody would think it would be a pretty even longer period of time. It was so long that I was just like, oh, okay.
You definitely need to take a drink of water after that one.
Actually,
yeah.
My mouth is dry. I literally have to take a drink of water now.
Well, I think you did a great job, and I think that Lambs did a great job. I liked the repetition, and that is just so powerful with, like, "Marry me gross." I always joke about that with my husband, especially because, you know, I'm chronically ill. So it's like I have this joke of, like, I'm the bog monster when I've been sick for a while. "Marry me gross." "Marry me broke." I like this kind of for better or worse repetition that they go through. And it seems like, you know, no matter how much they've been through, they still ask that question, even if, you know, they probably are married at the point where they're asking about it, and they're at the 50th birthday, and they're at the later on when they're older, and it's still, you know, be married, marry me helpless, marry me, you know, with my meager, tattered soul and meager flesh, and just no matter what state you're in, to still want to be together. Always, always wanting to be together. And that very end part, like when, as you left this world to another, I cry. Oh, I wanted to cry at that part. And then eventually when he dies and saying it's been too long since she died, but now they're finally going to be reunited. That's so powerful. It makes me think, in November, my grandmother passed away, and she happened to, or purposely did, I don't know, pass away on the what would have been her 50th wedding, no, not 50th, 70th, her 70th wedding anniversary. So it was like she was ready to go dance with my grandpa again. It was like we're going to go celebrate. Just the timing of it was interesting, and that makes me think of it here, where it's the "Would you marry me anyway?" after all that they've been through. It was just beautiful. Pam, would you comment anyway?
Yeah, I think that is really cool. I shouldn't say really cool, but I mean, I'm sorry that you lost your grandma, but it's just a wonderful story that she passed away on her 70th anniversary to go dance, you know, with your grandfather. That is wonderful. This is a great write. That title had me thinking of the song "Kiss the Girl" by the Little Mermaid. I like the imagery, and I like the heart put into this write and how it reflects on the idea of the wedding vows taken, you know, for richer or poor, for better or worse. I like the gesture of "I gave you an umbrella." And, wonderful lines there, because it's such a gesture of protection and caring. I also like how he speaks they write about the idea of love found later in life, and how oftentimes when we reach that maturity, we can appreciate love for what it is, and a partnership for what it is. And I too was really moved emotionally by that ending and the idea of finding each other and reconnecting in an afterlife. So wonderful write and very well done.
And Robbie, have you caught your breath enough to comment?
Yes, and I had a drink of water, too. this poem kind of, there was definitely a tenderness to it, and the repetition of it was interesting. You know, will you marry me, will you marry me, and kind of, it's kind of like every time that question was asked, it was like there's a more of a perfection to it, or more of a, refinement. To it. I like what you've both been saying. Like, it's kind of like that, for better or for worse, marrying no matter what. And it made me think about kind of the logistics of poetry and how things can go sometimes, because I was looking at, I don't know if this is a weird point, but it says March 18th that this was posted, and where it said, where it mentioned Musk. And the thing is like now, like he's had so much politics and stuff attached to him. And I think in March he didn't have quite so much in that, but I was kind of, like, I think if someone had posted this now or written it now, like, I know it was the Musk thing was to represent riches, like, you know, will you marry me broke? You know, well, I'll become rich for you, a.k.a. I'll become Elon Musk. But sometimes, you know, you write something like that, and then, say, 6 months down the road, something happens with this figure that you've chosen to represent riches or, you know, whatever, and you might look back and you'd be like, oh, okay, well, doesn't quite fit as well now, or there's just so much more of an attachment to this person, like whether it's political or something else that they've done or whatever. So that kind of little curiosity, I guess, is the best word for it, had caught my ear and my eye. I don't know how you two feel about that, and like how I presented that, but yeah.
Oh, I agree that it's from 2018, I think. Really changes the perspective.
Yeah. It's like, I think if someone said, I'll become Elon Musk for you now, it would be like, no thanks.
I think it's different. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a reason to run away.
I think this is from 2018. So that's why context. It was a pre-write. So that it does change things. And it's funny how some of those things change and some of them stay the same. I've been rewatching all of The Simpsons just as like a comfort show. And oh my gosh, some of the things from like 20 years ago, well, 20 years is an example, is an exaggeration, but like a long time ago, the jokes still work, or they work better now, or they don't at all. It's just the time difference. And I think that a reference like that, at the time this was written, was probably like a clever, like, I'll be rich and forward thinking. And yeah, now it has different context. But it's still a beautiful poem of timeless things. It's just, you're right, that particular reference has aged
not
somewhat.
Not held the test of time.
Yes. Yes. Good point. And Pam, can you read the one by Curtis, please?
Absolutely. This is Phoebe by Curtis X. Meyer. Phoebe is one of the names of Diana, goddess of the moon and the natural world, also known as Artemis, also the name of the Titan who became grandmother to Artemis, Apollo, and Hecate. Hecate, also the name of three songbirds in the genus Saornis, which is appropriate since it's also the name of one of the most successful birders of all time. There is an estimated 10,000 species of bird throughout the world. Phoebe Snetsinger saw 8,398 of them, approximately 85% of all known on Earth. The Guinness World Record holder for being the first person to document over 8,000, and that's just certified encounters with the ones she recognized. Birders also document songs, calls, and the drumming of woodpeckers. It's entirely possible the descriptions in her journals may in time reveal that she actually crossed paths with more species previously unknown about her and science. Only about 8,500 of that 10,000 we know today had been confirmed and cataloged by experts when she first began her journey at age 50. Doctors tell her she has terminal melanoma. The forecast is fatal. She'll be lucky if she makes it another year. She titled her posthumously published memoir, Birding on Borrowed Time. Her father founded the advertising agency responsible for creating the Pillsbury Doughboy, the Jolly Green Giant, the Marlboro Man, while she came from money, staring eyes locked on the grin of the gun barrel gave her purpose. Yes, let's not overlook that birdwatching and globetrotting are privileges. Let us not gloss over the gear and telescopes and hiring locals for private tours, and pilots and charter boat captains are far from cheap endeavors, but they are endeavors. What would you do with millions of dollars in a year to live? Would you go to Antarctica, the Amazon, remote islands in the South Pacific? Would you drop a finger down on the map and say, there? Dare you visit places no one has heard of on a hunch rumors that the caves, treetops, and beaches might hold treasure? Would you choose wanderlust over stagnation, pick parasites and mosquito nets over self-pity from the safety of a bedsheet cocoon? On an episode of Dancing with the Stars, a judge complains to Simone Biles that she didn't smile when she should have. Biles shot back, smiling doesn't win you gold medals. And this is how I imagine Snetsinger, not as delicate and dainty Aphrodite, but fierce as her namesake, the soul of the archer, Wonder Woman with binoculars, a ferocious pirate, hungry for more glory and bragging rights. If Ted Parker is the Lou Gehrig or Clemente or Shaq of Birding, slightly goofy, lovable, every man exalted by the community at large, posing for group photos, modestly smiling for the camera, I picture Snetsinger as Kobe Bryant, Muhammad Ali, Ty Cobb, perhaps Hugh Laurie in House, cocky, arrogant, rough around the edges, a hellraiser no one wants to deal with, but still everybody wants to have them on their team because they know what they're doing, because they're that damn good. No one wants a first-year med student with a sunny disposition to perform their open-heart surgery. You want the jaded hothead, a curmudgeon like House, strictly business, all trash talk, stubborn, single-minded, quick to temper. Loose cannons tell you you're the one who needs to catch up. Phoebes belong to the family. Tyranite, the tyrant flycatchers, so named for their tenacity. Some might say bravery and aggression as they lord over each, over other birds and life forms. Ted Parker was a legitimate scientist, patron saint of biomes, an artist, master of his craft, who recorded sounds of wildlife for museum archives, a mystic shaman who spoke the language of birds. Phoebe Snetsinger was a collector of experience. She hoarded checklist sightings like golden tokens in defiance of her illness. Less life list than a bucket list, less researcher than a stalker, armed with boundless budget, a paparazzo chasing after Hollywood icons, cloaked in camouflage right up to their front porch. Her arena was the entire planet, summits to underground burrows, the unholy love child of capitalism and endurance, athleticism, driven by her own countdown to destruction. She missed her mother's funeral to pursue birds, one of her daughter's weddings. In Papua New Guinea, her guide was beaten bloody, and she herself was gang-raped by five men with machetes. She survived malaria and a boating accident, walked away from a hostage situation in Ethiopia, shattered her wrist and elbow on separate occasions, continued one expedition with her wrist still broken and unset. Through it all, she maintained obsessive resilience, an optimistic streak most would call delusional. Discussing her rape in interview, she would only recount the joy of witnessing Kagu, a rare species, mere moments before she came back to finish what she started, shaking off the trauma back to the very spot of her attack just years later. Her reputation began to precede her. Birding groups in the field greeted her as celebrity. University students and rookie biologists glowed at the chance to indulge her company, soaking up tips, desperate to absorb her knowledge. Star-struck admirers, they asked her to autograph their clothes and guidebooks, worshippers at the altar of the moon goddess. And I can't help but wonder what impact her fame had back at home in the privacy of the nest. How many relationships became strained beneath the fog of feathers as she grew more blinded by blizzards assaulting her eyes. Over time, she starts to stumble on hikes, her arm now a wing. She can no longer spread fully to provide lift. Each day, she can feel death closing in, catching up to her. She trekked jungles, swamps, deserts, and high grass, prairies and savannas, islands and salt marshes, snow and glaciers in Alaska, all seven continents. Up the mountain, she can hear the voluminous opera of bones popping, the reaper keeping pace, always two steps behind. She may not have been likable, but she was a survivor. Even when the cancer came back after repeated remission, it wasn't what took her out. She died in Madagascar. Her van flipped over, killing her instantly, age 68, 18 years after her doctors diagnosed her death sentence. The last bird logged to her tally was a red-shouldered vanga, a species only recognized by ornithology as recently as 2 years before. She died not only heartbeats after getting to behold something most people in the Western world have never seen, but an animal most folks are unaware exists, never even heard of, for a roller coaster life, some have said, is worthy of its own movie. The closest she got was a tribute to the front page of Google, a doodle portrait on what would have been her 85th birthday. Birders tend to be women more than men, but men tend to be the more hyper-competitive, reducing flocks to numbers at present. Tiffany Kirsten holds the biggest year record for lower 48 states. Maya Rose Craig was 13 when she set the record for youngest person to see 5,000 species, 19 when she visited Antarctica, the youngest person to birdwatch on all seven continents. Setzinger is known as one of perhaps as little as two people in history to experience over 8,000 species in their lifetime. She's certainly the only woman credit where it's due. There must be something said for women dominating a man's game. Birding has been called hunting without the killing. There is something to be said about women venturing out into the ever-expansive universe while being told that they're the ones who are meant to gather. It is men we envision as hunters and explorers, the Fawcetts, the Audubons, the Teddy Roosevelts, the Ripleys, Indiana Jones. This is Setzinger's legacy. Standard she set, the trial she helped blaze. When the best in the world is a woman, it gives women who come after permission to become the best in the world, to inherit the title. How many of us have good fortune enough to die doing what we love? Birding is her era, sent her through war-torn countries, rural backwoods, and beyond decades before. Her presence there inspired governments to install ecotourism efforts as means to boost economy, safaris, nature trails, refugees, and national parks. She kept it moving. Immortality achieved through her accomplishments, decades of unreachable stats and goals, the toppest of top tiers, GOAT status, cemented elite, her name carved into stone, her name synonymous with the sport, too fast for the specter's grasp, jaws snapping at her tail feathers, inches away from the mouth of the beast. Tim Rumsey said, life is so much sweeter when you can see the bullet coming. 18 years on borrowed time, and somewhere on an island off the coast of Africa in a realm forever haunted by the howling of lemurs, Latin for nocturnal spirit, a dimension untouched, glimpsed only by our imaginations. A bird rises its subtle voice above mist of the cloud forest. She sings a song louder than death itself, whispers more melodic than extinction. There is no cancer here, no loggers, no chainsaws, no poaching or gunfire, only music, orchestras, symphonies exclusive to those deserving of their senses, the ones who don't waste their precious eyes and ears her wings no longer broken, a fleck of vibrant red sparkles among the cosmos of the dark brush, dense as deep space, hoarding her secrets from weary travelers, a flash of blood dancing like glitter, tornado ballet of sequins in the night, or else a black figure, eager for migration, casting shadow over peak of the mountain, the collective memory of entire villages. There are no Phoebes in Madagascar except one who never left. She prepares to clutch the hemisphere in her talons, the globe in a fist of plumage. She intends to swallow that horizon before her in one gulp, her beak wide open, wider than wingspan. No cages, no hospital beds. She is reborn, ghost of the impenetrable thicket, another restless phantom, guardian of castles in the sky, her heart and outstretched arms ready to soar. Okay, Robbie, hand over that water.
Well-earned water.
I know you.
My goodness.
You beat mine.
You know, Curtis usually writes haikus. Everything I've ever read by him has been extremely short, like normally just haikus. And then this one, honestly, Pam, I didn't look at how long this one was, and my goodness, Curtis, this is different for you. This is basically a biography. I mean, it could be a book. Wow, and he's so knowledgeable about her. It does make me curious about her work, and I looked it up, and, you know, it is a real book that she did, and on Birding on Borrowed Time is an excellent title for her book. This did a great job at telling her story, and it didn't make her out to be perfect. As much as he clearly admires her, you know, like, she missed her daughter's wedding. And he says at some point that, like, she may not have been liked, and but she still had good things going for her. And, you know, probably wasn't something for anyone, but it's pretty incredible that it wasn't her illness that killed her. I like that he included that fact. And I think the last stanza is my favorite because it's like her being wild intends to swallow the horizon in a gulp, and like her beak open wider than the wingspan. This is like really beautiful wording at the end. I feel like that last stanza was the most like a poem, whereas a lot of it read kind of like an essay or a nonfiction book. But it had poetic moments for sure, and that last stanza really captured that. Robbie, what were your thoughts?
It's a potent question. I know someone who's going through cancer, so it was a little bit rough at times to hear, and sometimes my mind just kind of. Anyways, it's a potent question of what will you do in the last years of your life, you know, the time that you have left, and it kind of like in this essay, it's like, it's amazing the passion, because, you know, like, sometimes people, they find that one thing, like, they give up everything for it. It's like, you know, did you go to a wedding? No, I went to the birding trip. Did you go to the graduation? No, I went to the birding trip, you know, that sort of thing, or whatever the passion might happen to be. And it's amazing when somebody finds that a passion of that level, where it really is like quite literally everything, you know, because you're saying they what is it that they missed? You said that they missed something, right?
Oh, yeah. There's her mother's funeral and her daughter's wedding.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know if it was like she was on birding trips then, but or if it was just like logistical things with trips or whatever. But, you know, it's amazing when something becomes that all-encompassing.
Yeah, it becomes like obsession. It seems
they have an obsessive feel here. I didn't want to use. I'm reluctant to use the word obsession because obsession has sometimes a negative connotation to it. I don't want to sound like I'm dinging this person, but yeah, there is like some obsessive tone to it.
I think so, but I think brilliant people tend to be obsessed within their field, so it's not out of the question for.
No.
Someone who's successful like that. Okay. So I'm now lost in the birding world, but I will try to bring myself back to poetry. Rainfall and Gale by Ben Hart. And this is going to be another long one, I presume, because he usually is. We had not very many poems, but they're long ones. It's 4 a.m. My body doesn't know how to fall asleep without my liver working the night shift. So I wage a war of silhouettes with the vacancy in my bloodstream between these empty sheets. If I was a chameleon, I would disguise myself as rainfall. But choosing invisibility over flight is the coward's way out. If I was the moon in rosebud dusk, I wish they'd sing me back to daylight. Because music shake is the least of my lonely, and I am not ready yet to be the light they look to. If I were Parisian, I would only attend funerals in autumn, because to see the world on fire is to finally exhale with it. If I were you, I would have done the same, but I would sing to the moon at nightfall every time. This is not goodbye. Of course I'll be there to meet you on the other side. Next Tuesday at noon, I'll be 24 years old. This time around, April is a woman of fleeting beauty. And I am losing count of the number of days that I have lived on the mute side of the mirror, continuing an addiction until the day that not only my mind wakes up, today, my body still feels like an uninhabited island, just water and glass orbiting an unknown. Tomorrow I'll wake up 2 steps further, but still one behind, still in the shadow of numb. A friend of mine killed herself in September 2015. Her mother's buried her in a reed embrace and laid her, not in a grave, but safely below waves, a Frisian green. I fear when it's my time to go, no one will sing for me. Not because there were no words, but because there might just have been too many. I've given up on waiting to hear you say, you were just collateral. I was doing it to myself. You said a smoker's lungs should count as their suicide note, and I realized what I was building here, my library of last words. You are so ridiculously loved. Friends bought me sunshine in a picture frame. I only write rainfall and gale. I am too numb to be frail. I am shaking, but I am thankful of the place I'm in. Still a long way from deliverance, but I only need to look for the light on my windowsill to know I am missed. I gave them one that read, there is no going back, so save the breadcrumbs for when we're birds in winter. I'll try again, I guess. I showed you paper stars dancing in acoustic chemtrail ballet of carcinogenic chalk outlines across the great blue yonder like tracers in daylight and still you thought love was bringing a sledgehammer to my porcelain empire, saying my eyes were a forest fire, an immolation of the past, a horizon's revenge that left everything they touched hollowed. And as the world exhaled with me, still I thought you were wrong about us being stardust. I'll get better, and I'll choose flight over suicide. I'll choose to be kind. You'll see. End poem. Pam, can you start the comments, please?
Absolutely. First of all, wonderful read there, Phoebe. I always get a big kick out of how close in age Ben is to my oldest kids, and their birthdays are close, too. Like his birthday is actually only the day after my son, and they're 2 years apart. And then my daughter is born in May, and he's like a year older than my daughter. And I'm always like, oh my goodness, that makes me realize, like, I always know Ben's young, but that makes me realize how truly young he is, either that or how truly old I am. And just amazing imagery and metaphors, powerful lines, such a brilliant and emotive write on dealing with loss, and especially the unexpected loss of suicide. And my heart truly goes out. He has the imagery and metaphors in this, and yet he also has very straightforward lines that have a raw, gripping honesty to them, especially in part three. And happy belated birthday, by the way, to Ben. I hope he did have a wonderful day. But I have to say, I especially liked, I showed you Paper Stars Dancing in an Acoustic Chemtrail Ballet of Carcinogenic Chalk Outlines Across the Great Blue Yonder, like tracers in daylight, and still you thought love was bringing a sledgehammer to my porcelain empire. The idea of offering up sacrifice of self and the destruction of love, amazing lines and very well done.
Yeah, I like what you said about how he has beautiful metaphor, but he also has that, like, stark realism, and he does, like, he has that, the grittiness of it, where he's not afraid to say, you know, what it is. You know, the suicide is kind of a taboo topic, and he mentions it in a lot of his poems, and he doesn't go into the gruesome detail about it, but he says, you know, it is what it is. He doesn't hide from what the poem is about. It's not super vague. He does use some really nice metaphors, like you say, but he also is direct. I liked when he said, oh, now where is it? I had it highlighted, and then I clicked, and I lost it. the very beginning, when he's talking about not being able to fall asleep without my liver working the night shift. So without drinking, it's hard to sleep. He's trying to give that up, it seems. And when he's looking in the mirror, and then he says, my body still feels like an uninhabited island, just water and glass orbiting and unknown. I really like the part right after that where it says, tomorrow I'll wake up two steps further, but still one behind. Because, you know, he'll be two steps further, maybe on his sobriety, but it's, you know, you're always, there's always that one step back that where you're struggling. There was a part here, too, with here. A smoker's lungs should count as their suicide note. The yeah. And I realized what I was building here was my library of last words. There's so much feeling in here with, like, there's no going back, so save the breadcrumbs. But he's choosing the flight at the end, so keep flying. But, wow, this is very painful. It's, you know, I love reading his stuff, but it also tends to break my heart. So I love it, Ben, but also be safe. Robbie.
Love it. This is so strongly just like it was so much a, I guess the word is complete, like such a complete portrait of what someone feels in life. And it's almost like it's something circling back where there's so much tragedy in life that you, it kind of circles back to, well, you know, this is what life is. So I'll just continue living on because I understand that life has suffering in it where, you know, sometimes like someone's to a point where they, you know, it's too much for them, but this feels kind of like the circling back where, you know, you've seen so much that you understand the reality of life and you understand that it's best to accept what life is and what it can be and to keep pressing on and do your best. And I especially got that there, that feeling when I almost forgot that I'll get better and I'll choose flight over suicide. I'll choose to be kind. You'll see. So it's kind of, it's like an acknowledgement of, I have this feeling of suicide and I acknowledge it, but I'll choose something else. And especially the fact that it's flight over suicide, because flight is like taking off. And I think of a more positive and a more like victory laden sort of a feeling with flight. Although I don't know if it's that kind of flight or flight like, but something else. I'm not 100% sure in that context.
Yeah. No, I think that was a good way to look at it. I know, because I was thinking, like, you know, fight or flight kind of thing at first, but I agree, flight has more of a beautiful thing. It's like you're going to choose to go up instead of, you know, going under. It's a big choice. All the feels in on the poems. Like I said at the beginning, me and my freaking prompts and the people that give us feelings, because that's the poetry I like, but also it's painful. I'm a masochist in that way. Give me all the tears. So our next poem is by David John Brompton, and I think it's your turn to read, Robbie.
Yeah, I almost feel guilty now. I've got five lines to read. The Future by David John Brompton. We'll learn from our mistakes and start to see. We'll think about the future, every action for all. We'll all look in the mirror and start to feel free. We'll do what we must, and we'll do it standing tall. And that was The Future by David John Brompton.
Thank you, Robbie. And I mean, this is a good goal of, like, yes, we want to learn from our mistakes, and it's a really good way to be. If, unfortunately, it's not necessarily true. Not everyone learns from their mistakes. Not everyone looks in the mirror and starts to feel free and makes those choices. But it would be really fabulous if they did, and to make this the goal, and you know, I think it works really well with the prompt, and that it's full of hope. And I certainly do hope that this is more the way that people go. Yeah, good thoughts. Miss Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, I apologize, but I'm unable to comment on this one, and I was only half paying attention, so I apologize.
That's okay. No problem at all. Our next one actually has an audio. And see if I can find it here.
Why do people commit suicide? It's because they're hopeless and depressed. Their individual agony is an unendurable, and death seems to be most grieving. In a heart center, the wind from the East Coast carries an innocent noise, this was from a globe. Along with short time, down the side of the sky, down the river drift. I walked, which I have been. Everything seemed better as I entered the bending world. My eyes were keen for the past, as I wore a cloak dipped in mortification. My soul burned in the ashes, wishing I were dead, and I faded away into blackness. As I peered through my window, I saw the pink passing dirt. But it infected after rising, viewing bird sky, dreading a moon, getting a glimpse of tears, rising from mud, with the additional rusta, beauty, mercenaries, immortals, carrying sublime victim charm, amidst her snows, by the mission founded, by echoes, memories, and dream intended, I took the fire to make a life wave. A brilliant, an old soul world, where new path is in it. I was dying with Mr. and Eve in March 2019, the first day I woke up, and didn't know what had happened to me. I attempted to hide 3 times but failed. What I could do only makes stronger. Then I started to smile, and God was putting a line. I get a feeling from another person into the airport. So I give up. If they do so, remember God's plan, a better dream. Don't judge God, how big the sound is. Get the sound, how big you got it. Thank you.
Thank you, Jaskaran, for making audio and sharing your work. I liked the wording of, as I wore a cloak dipped in mortification. I thought that was a really great way of phrasing that. And I liked, catapulted me from an unknown person into a revered poet. Catapulted was a good word choice right there. I mean, this whole thing is very inspiring. You know, it's talking about how, you know, people can feel hopeless, and how his own experience with, you know, with his Wilson's disease made him go through that that deep depression and suicidal struggles, not knowing what's happening to him and feeling hopeless within his illness, but then to find purpose and see that there are things that he can still do. It's very full of hope, and I think that he has such a fabulous attitude about it. Thank you, Jaskaran. Pam, would you like to comment? We may have lost Pam. So, Robbie.
You know what I might want to do is, unmute myself.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I thought this was just absolutely beautiful, and it is a kind of poem that does move you to tears. The imagery in this, the metaphors, the raw honesty, and the emotive lines as he boldly speaks about his experience with Wilson's and with depression, and I think it's the kind of poetry that people need to read in case they're in a similar situation, and they can know what it feels. You know, they can know that somebody relates to what they're going through. You know, and I'm really glad he chose to share this with us. A wonderful write on growth and purpose found in the testing of self. I really liked the imagery of I walked with steps of gloom. Everything seemed blurry as I entered the maddening world. My eyes murky with pungent past as I wore a cloak dipped in mortification. And then also the line, God put poetry in my lap. You know, just a beautiful and thoughtful line on the idea that sometimes what we truly need comes along at the right time. And poetry really can be so very healing. So excellent write and very well done.
Well said, Pam. Robbie, would you like to comment?
Like I was saying in the chat, the end of the poem almost made me cry. And it's, I think it's because of the how much you see how much poetry meant to him. Like, it literally saved him. It's when someone finds that, like when they're, like in the other poem, the woman was a birder, like kind of like all along, but in the situation like this, someone finds something when they're almost at that point, right? And it's something new to them, and they find it, and in this case, you know, he's saying God put it in his lap, and it literally saves them. It's a new passion that they find that gives them purpose and, you know, takes them away from the misery they feel. And the like, you know, if there's anything that anybody needs during such a time, it's not even a distraction. Like, distraction's too soft a word, but like a, you know, a passion or like an intense interest, because like, that does wonders, because all of a sudden your mind has something else to focus on. And just the general tone of this poem is just so intense, because like the first part was just, you know, there was so much sorrow and such. And then the last part, there's so much elation over the fact that he found something that saved him. And so it was just like, this is just like a gut buster. This is like a, you know, I think the most emotive. No, it is. To me, it's the most emotive poem that I've heard played here. It's amazing that way. I'm glad he found poetry, by the way. I'm glad, because, yeah, saved him.
Me too. It's so great, because it's a creative outlet. It's therapeutic. It's a way to connect with people. I'm really happy that he found that outlet as well. This next poem is by my good friend Daniel Deschino, who is the co-host for Double Helix, my Thursday night show. Home, Daniel Deschino. I walk, run, drive, fly, bicycle, carpool, train, skateboard, rollerblade, skip, hop, and jump. Yet here I stand at home, as if I never went anywhere. Home today, as if I never went anywhere. I always look where I'm going, ahead, in front of me, up in the distance. But there's always more. Not really sure what I'm expecting. Eventually, an endless, all-encompassing wall. Its direction skyward to eternity. to signify I've basically reached the destination. There's always more. I can always go on. I think the point of a journey is not to arrive. Once I arrive, there is no more journey. Seems like I'm always just trying to go home. I guess that's all a destination is, a home. I've seen concerts. I have an assigned seat or find a place to stand. That's mine. I belong there. I've been to jobs. People there say hi to me by name. They expect me to be there. I belong. I even have a small desk and a chair I call mine. I've been to restaurants, hotels. They let me rent temporary home. I relax and enjoy. At night, I dream of the journeys, the safety of a warm bed, a drink on a dimly lit chair, a smile in the comfort of home. And I believe in the journey, because if I don't believe in something, then I believe in nothing. End poem. Pam, I'll get you to start.
Absolutely, I'd be happy to. Yeah, this is wonderful. As always, Dan just has such thoughtful and, heartfelt lines. An excellent write that spoke to me on finding happiness in the comforts of home and yet craving the adventure of new experience within the journey. And I also like how he speaks on the importance of the journey itself, but also, knowing that there is somewhere to go towards. I also like how it always seems like, I shouldn't say always, but a lot of times with Dan's writing, it's like he's taking us for a journey with him, a walk with him through his thoughts. I think that comes through especially with not really sure what I'm expecting, eventually an endless, all-encompassing wall, its direction skyward to eternity to signify I've basically reached the destination. I think the point of a journey is not to arrive. Once I arrive, there is no more journey. And I like that. I think those are wonderful philosophical thoughts on how important it is to truly experience life rather than constantly worrying about what happens at the end of life. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
I find it interesting how there are different kind of responses to this prompt. Some of them are about, like, I'm planning ahead for my future, and some of them are, I'm going to enjoy the moment and stop worrying about planning ahead. But I think a lot of it is like kind of a generational issue where it's like the ones who are planning ahead, I'm looking at them and they're quite young writers, whereas Dan's not old, but he's, not in his 20s either. So he's reached a point where he's like, my planning has happened and now I'm going to enjoy my moments, I think people are all at different stages of their life, and creating the future that you want can be different depending on what stage you're at. Creating a future of, being healthy and relaxed in your retirement means not being totally stressed out in your 40s and 50s, so you actually live long enough to have retirement. You gotta step back and allow yourself to enjoy those moments. I think everyone's responses to this prompt have been pretty varied, and that makes sense, because everyone's at different stages and has different experiences. There's been quite the variety of perspectives, which is fun for like when you only have one sentence prompt and you get so many different responses. I'm surprised by how short the lines are in this. Like, run is its own whole line. Fly is its own line. So it's like almost bullet form, like point form at the beginning, and then it gets to be longer sentences later on when it's talking about eventually an endless, all-encompassing wall. And his longer sentences tend to be questions. And so it's like the facts are very straightforward and short, But when you're questioning things, it's harder to be succinct because you're wondering, and that's those moments where you do kind of linger. Yeah, I'm thinking out loud, so it worked. Ravi, what were your thoughts?
Well, funnily enough, I'm actually, I kind of expect this form from Dan, because to me, he's the ultimate example. And I have to write that in a comment form, but to me, he's like the armchair philosopher. He's like kind of that, not quite stream of consciousness sort of a style or thought, but he has that, it's so much in his poetry, he has that style of, you know, he's thinking deep thoughts, but he's saying it in a more everyday matter-of-fact way. And so to me, like, because that's the impression I've gotten in the past in his poetry, then when I see the format here, it fits that sort of idea I have of what his thought process is as he expresses in his poetry. So, like, you know, here he has that kind of almost stream of consciousness thing here. It's like, well, I walk, run, drive, fly, bicycle, carpool. So to me, it represents that, and that this whole poem had that feeling to it. And I thought your recite actually of it captured that very well, because the tone of your voice and the way you paced yourself, it perfectly captured that, right? And again, he's encapsulating what he thinks and how he feels in these very succinct but very informative ways. Like, you can really see what he's trying to say, and that he's saying something of substance and what his feelings are, but in a more everyday and succinct sort of sentence form.
He's very accessible in his writing. It's like, you know, it's deep enough that, you know, a literary person can take something out of it. And it's also, you know, plain language enough that someone who's not normally into poetry will be able to understand it. So it's a good mix that way. My phone made a weird noise. Just one second. Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Yep, you're on.
Okay. I was worried I got disconnected because it was like beep and then dead silence. Okay. We have one more poem from the contest. And Pam, I think it's your read.
All right. And this is Firm Foundation's Favor for Fulfilling Future Desire by Brundaband Panda. Future stands on foundation present, fact aptly truth about history of past. First branch of knowledge is history, firm root for the education as tree, future flower, present tree, past root. Fully connected to provide tasty fruit, fully favorable feeling filled in quote, future dream be real by firm present, from the beginning very firm foundation, fully essential, otherwise future in vain, end poem.
Thank you, Pam. Always one with the alliteration. Brundaband Panda uses a lot of F's in his work. I liked the third couplet the best, I think. The future flower, present tree, past root, fully connected to provide tasty fruit. You need to have the future, the present, and the past to make up the rewards of life. And that is the fruit. You have to, you know, plan, but be aware of your past and be aware of your present to be able to make the most out of things. So I personally thought that that was the most insightful of the couplets. Robbie, what were your thoughts?
Well, to me, the image of a tree is utterly perfect for conveying the idea of planning for the future or looking at the future. And I thought that was well thought out here. And also where it says, like, not just a tree, but, like, just kind of flowering in general, and that in general, because it talks about, you know, future flower fully connected to provide tasty fruit. So, you know, like, you're rooted in the past and making plans in the present for the future, and the future is, like, flowering. So that, I thought that was perfect. And even though it has nothing to do with past, present, and future, and that, I thought of the it's cute little, there was a squirrel in Scandinavian mythology called Ratatask, and he would go up and down the world tree, and basically he'd be spreading one rumor from one god to another and making trouble, and, like, it caused conflict, I think, between the two worlds. Like, he'd just go down and say, like, he'd go down and say, this god said to you, said this about you. He said, oh, really? Well, blah, 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 blah. And then he'd go up to the top of the tree and says, oh, yeah, well, you know what so-and-so said about you? And they just keep going back up and down that way, causing trouble, which to me is just about the most hilarious thing that you could hear in Nordic mythology. And so even though it had nothing to do with anything, it reminded me of that and gave me a laugh.
Funny how our minds work, and for some reason I'm picturing that squirrel like the one from Ice Age, Scrat. You know what I'm talking about, trying to chase that acorn. That's how I picture him. Pam, you did the reading. Would you also like to comment?
Sure, yes. Wonderful imagery, great use of alliteration. Really an excellent write on the importance of building dreams on a firm foundation. And I, too, like the reference to the future flower, present tree, and past root. But I also liked the lines before that, first branch of knowledge is history, the idea that we have to learn from our history. So excellent write and very well done.
Speaking of family trees and history, my mom joined us last night. I don't know if anybody heard. Well, Robbie did. You were there. Yeah, it was fun. My mom called the show. Because the previous week I had been planning on recording from her house because I was visiting her, and she was like, oh, can I pop in the background and say hi? So she was very disappointed that that Blog Talk was down. And so for the show this week, I'm like, you know, you can join remotely. And she's just like, I can. So I got her to call in.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. I don't think she realized she doesn't have to be, like, right beside me to do it. She was excited but nervous. Sent me a message afterward, like, was that okay? Like, yes.
I was glad that I called in because I had wanted to call in onto your shows for a while now because I hadn't called in a while. But something kept getting in the way. And then, like, even though I wasn't 100%, I was pretty much 100% by the end of the night. The stuff from earlier in the day had worn off pretty much. And I was like, you know what? I don't care. I keep missing a chance to call in on a Faziana show. I'm just going to call in.
Well, I'm glad you did. Yeah. Well, it was so sweet because when she didn't get to do it the first time, we made a little video of her talking to Dan. She was like, it's too bad I didn't get to meet you, Dan, and sent it to him, and he was like, that was the sweetest thing ever.
Aw, that is sweet.
So now they did. So it's good. Although, I think Dan was a little surprised to find out that he's, like, basically the same age as my mom. So he was like, No, I could be your father.
A little traumatizing for my imagination.
It was. He sounded a little upset about that. That's okay. We'll pretend I'm young. Okay, it looks like Errant Panther gave us a poem, and there is 4 minutes left that we have. So, Robbie, would you read that one for me? I'm just going to post it right now.
Oh, okay. I'm just going to have to refresh. I actually wrote a poem called Refresh because I remember back in the day with Blog Talk, when their chat rooms were just so junky, you had to keep refreshing and refreshing and refreshing so the chat room would... And I just got fed up, and one day I just wrote a poem called Refresh, just in retaliation. So here we go with from Errant Panther, Waves of Obsession. Breaths swell with deep rise and fall in the silence between each passionate meeting of lips. Two bodies meld into one, resolute against the surging tide of opposition, but unable to resist. The persistent waves of obsession, the touch of water on flesh, placate nerve endings, filled with blood, otherwise set to boil. Hold me in this caress until our frames are equally weak, and passion follows every motion as we sink into the moment. Oh, Errant Panther, you dog, you!
Yes. Oh my. Not quite on topic, but you know, on something. very, very exciting. I like placates the nerve endings. Otherwise, set to boil. Damn. Pam, any thoughts on the sexiness?
Oh, my goodness. If all the poetry had been like this one, we would have had to call this show All Sinners, No Saints. And, yeah.
That's fair. Yeah.
Yeah. No, this was great. This is wonderful sensuality. I love Robbie's reading, but I will say that I would love to have Errant share this on either a Frisky Friday or a Wednesday night so we can hear it in his voice also. Wonderful sensuality. Yep. And I really like the touch of water on flesh, placates nerve endings filled with blood, otherwise set to boil. Wonderful lines and very well done.
I agree. We are all out of town. We are all out of time. clearly, I'm falling asleep. Thank you so much, Pam and Robbie, for being here with me. I really appreciate both of you for being here, for commenting, and just for hanging out and talking with me. And thank you to Fill My Eyes for giving us this time slot. And thank you to everyone who wrote and contributed poetry. Good night.
Good night, all.